All right, everybody, good morning. Can I have your attention? If you are here for the Blind Kitchen, you're in the right place. So, I am Sheila Young, and I am here to facilitate this call. I have worked with Deborah Erickson. She is a chef and a very smart lady, so we are thrilled to have her with us this year. I want to thank Marianne Grignan for being our Zoom host. I want to thank Herbie Allen for being our streamer. Cecily Nipper is our monitor. And Ryan Cordell is our in-house Zoom support. So without any further ado, I'm going to say good morning, Deborah. How are you?
Good morning, Sheila. I'm much better now that I finally got through. I appreciate you having me again. It's so nice. And thank to all of you who are here this morning. I appreciate it, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you. I will start out by talking about the elephant in the room, which is fears of cooking with vision loss. And I won't go into them too deeply, because I definitely want to talk to what the people in this conversation are interested in talking about. And there you can go a million different ways with food and different subjects around it. I am the executive chef and founder of the Blind Kitchen. I am culinary trained, and I was the only blind student in culinary school, so I had to learn to solve a lot of problems. I am also myself blind. I have retinitis pigmentosa and very little vision in one eye, and it's basically light perception, which I'm grateful for, but sometimes it causes me more problems. Yeah, that's another story. So the fears of cooking with vision loss are, of course, cutting yourself and burning yourself. And also there are some other fears, but there are tools and techniques that you can use to overcome them. I'm sure some of you already have. So let's talk about cutting ourselves. So in the Blind Kitchen, we have a tool called the cut glove. And what it is, it's a cut resistant glove that allows you to hold the food in your hand that's wearing the glove. And then you have the knife or the cutting tool in the other hand, and you can then, I put the knife, the glove on my hand. I did this just the other day in a presentation, and then I put my palm up towards the ceiling, and I pick up a very sharp knife, and I run it back and forth across my palm. And I can feel the movement, and I can feel the pressure, but it never cuts through the glove, not even a single thread. It just, they can be cut. If you took scissors or an axe or something like that, it could happen. But it, for the most part, for most commonly used kitchen activities. And where I learned about this was in, I was doing a work experience in a commercial kitchen, and all of the cooks, long before they ever knew a blind woman was going to apply for the job, had to wear these gloves. The insurance required it. So they're a real thing out there. I don't know how it took me so long to discover them, but it's been a very good tool. And the best place that works for me, especially, is grating foods. Because even when I could see, I have retinitis pigmentosa, so my vision went over time. Scraping potatoes or carrots or cheese along a box grater, it would get my knuckles pretty much every time. So that's a really good place for it. Now, the other is the fear of burning yourself, and we can talk about a couple of things, but I also want to say that anything I bring out and say, oh, we could talk about this or we could talk about this, chances are it's already on the website, theblindkitchen.com, in an audio described video. So no matter what your level of vision is, if I'm not talking and explaining the step-by-steps through it, then we hire a professional man, and he can see and he can look and narrate what I am doing if I'm concentrating and can't talk. My husband's favorite time. But as long as I'm you'll know what's going on, regardless of your vision level. And then each video, or we haven't made all of the videos yet, they're still in process, because I keep adding tools. That's my favorite part, by the way, but not making the videos, adding the tools. But we tell what the tool is, why it's blind friendly, and how to use and care for it. So you'll get a detailed physical explanation of what the tool is. So you won't be surprised. And when you get something, the minimalism and simplicity of the blind kitchen is what makes it work, because you don't have to be a genius with technology for most of the tools. You don't have to have a ton of money for most of the tools. And the techniques and tips are free. So some of the heat related videos that are very popular are how to brown ground meat. A lot of people struggle with how to know when it's done and how do you make it so it doesn't fall all over the place and out of the pan. It's a thing. And if you have questions about that, trust me, a lot of other people did, which is what inspired most of the videos in the blind kitchen. The other one is how to center a pan on a hot stove if you can't see the heating element. And that's especially true with ceramic or glass top stoves. Those are tricky, but it's manageable, and you can do it confidently and safely once you get the technique. So there's also a video, or we could talk about it here. The other is fear of starting a kitchen fire, which I find most blind and visually impaired people don't. Most cooks do it at least once over a lifetime, whether you can see or not. But we have a tool that's called the Flame Tamer, and it's basically a fiberglass blanket. It's 40 inches by 40 inches when you pull it out of the pouch and unfold it. And it has handles so that your hands don't have to be near where the blanket's going to go. And it's made for standard home appliances. So it's going to cover and block the oxygen to any fire flame on that stovetop. The size is perfect to make sure you've covered the right area without coming into contact with the flames yourself. So the other fear is making your family sick because the food is undercooked. And this is especially true with poultry, chicken, turkey, duck, and the other is seafood. You can make people sick if it isn't cooked to a certain minimal degree. Beef doesn't matter as much. You can have a medium rare steak or a well done steak, but you're never going to have a medium rare chicken breast. It's just not going to be good for you. So when I first lost my vision and I was trying to figure out how to cook and I couldn't see a thermometer anymore, that I would overcook the food because I would rather feed my family an overdone product than possibly make them sick with an underdone one. But you don't have to overcook it. We can have a talking thermometer, and they're out there, they're real things, and they can tell you the internal temperature, because let's face it, even cooks that can see can't look through a piece of chicken as it's cooking. The thermometer helps them as well, but we need to have access to the information it's producing, and that's through a spoken voice. So that's the other fear, making people sick. And then the other one is fear of embarrassing yourself. And that's by looking messy, disorganized, knocking things over, not being able to find things. That's awkward. We've all been there. We know how that works, and it is. But there are certain tools. I have work trays that help me keep like things in the same place and keep them organized. I use Lazy Susans, small ones, so that there's nothing in the middle of them. All I'm working with is the stuff on the outside. And I use them in my cupboards, and I use them in my refrigerator. Why not? If you can bring stuff from the back to the front with just a swirl of your fingertips, you're not going to be reaching in and knocking things over as you try to find the right thing. They're pretty handy. And then the other is fear of embarrassing yourself because your food looks awful, you know, or you give a huge scoop of mashed potatoes to one of your guests and only a little bit to the other because you can't touch it and you don't know really what's going on. You're doing your best, but you can use things such as like ice cream scoops. They're used in commercial kitchens. There's like 42 different sizes. So you could give each of your guests a level scoop of rice, and then they have a perfectly shaped dome on their plate that you can sprinkle with herbs or nuts or cheese, and they'll get the same amount. So there's several different tools and cooking vessels that you can use to make sure that each of your guests gets the same attractive, consistent presentation. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and I think I've given us all kind of a level playing field to speak from, that we're all in the same place with the same fears and same concerns. And I'll open up the floor to questions so we can address what's happening with you all. I can barely hear you, Sheila. Okay.
All right, hold on. I've got, let me squeeze by you just for a second.
Sure. Switch with
me. Okay. It's not the mic, it's the operator.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Love you too. And I did neglect, and I apologize. We do have two door prizes, so let me give them out before. And for anybody that does win a door prize this weekend, you can get them from Sally in registration. And if you don't get them, you will need to get them Sunday morning at the business meeting. But the first door prize is the $25 donation from John Richards, who is our other Zoom guru. And it goes to John Plesko. And I apologize. I don't know John, and I don't know how I haven't met John. Oh, okay. Well, congratulations, John. And then the other one is a $25 gift card donated by Southwest Council of the Blind, and it goes to Bruce Hildebrandt from Manatee. So, yeah. So, all right. So, if Marianne, do we have a hand in Zoom?
We do not currently have a hand in Zoom, Sheila. Right, thanks for asking.
Let me take a couple in here, and then I'll check back with you, or you can just tell me when we do.
I will.
So, all right, do we have a question in the room? Raise your hand. Hold on. We need a mic.
We changed the batteries in the operators.
All right, here.
I guess it wasn't the operators, the batteries.
Thank you for apologizing to her. Terry Suarez, just a quick question about the rice and using the ice cream scooper. Do you need to prep the scooper with like any oil or something so it doesn't stick? Or because there's different kind of rice and they tend to stick to, so you get that nice form.
Yeah, no, good question. It, you're right. It depends on the rice, how starchy it is and how sticky. And you can just use a cooking spray and do that. Or with, if you use the kind of scoop where it's got the little wire that runs across the cavity when you pull the thumb press, then that will help to release it. That's the better one to use. They have the kinds that you just push down with your thumb and just a little bitty thing in the back of it, it doesn't pick up all the food. You need the ones that have the little wire that runs and scrapes the cavity of the ice cream scoop. And they have them as little as your pinky if you want to make something like that. So those ice cream scoops, so yes, it would be a good idea if you have something starchy like potatoes or rice to probably spray it first. But it doesn't mean it's impossible without it. I would try it without guests before you try it with guests so that you're confident in what you're doing. But they sell those in sizes that are like the ones we sell in the Blind Kitchen are just 1 ounce, but they're good for meatballs. They're good for some kinds of cookies so that all of your cookie dough is then consistent. There's no rounded heaps in the Blind Kitchen. It's all predictable and level. And so when I scoop that out in my hand, that 1 ounce, then I roll it in my palm like a golf ball, and then I squish it just a little bit. And now I've got I have 12 exactly the same size, so they'll cook evenly and consistently. So you can have fun with those little domes doing different kinds of things with them.
I got another question. Hold on.
Oh, thank you. Hi, my name is Lori.
And hi, Lori.
Two questions. One, are you selling your products here at the convention?
I am not. I'm located in Portland, Oregon, and I was unable to travel for this convention. I'm sad to say I would have loved to have come and meet Sheila in person. We almost met one time, but that didn't work out either.
My other question is, can you give some tips on with decreasing vision, not able to see, how to sear meat well without when you can't see it?
Right. Okay. So that's a good question. And I want to address two issues with that. There's going to be as many answers to this as there are opinions, as there are cooks. But the way the important thing for to know is the science of at what things happen at what temperatures. So when you're searing something, Okay. When you're searing something, like, let's say, are you thinking about a steak? Is that where we're?
Yes, she said.
Yes, okay, thank you. So, a couple of things. If you're cooking with vision loss and you want to have your steaks medium rare, well done, it's important to know what the temperature, the internal temperature of the very center of it, it's going to be. So for medium rare, it's usually around 130, 135. Some people will go as low as 125. So a way to do this consistently and evenly, and it's called a reverse sear, and I'll get to that. This way, so what you do is you put it in your oven, and let's say you want it to be medium rare. We'll say 140 or 145. You set your oven to 145. You season your steaks, get them all ready to go, and then you put them in the oven until the entire steak is 145. Or 140. I take it out a few minutes early because now you're going to take it out of the oven. They're done to the temperature that you want them to be, so you don't really want to cook them further. But you'll have a hot skillet, like probably a cast iron skillet, works very nicely for steaks. And you'll have hot oil in there. You'll want to make sure that you can smell the oil. You don't want to catch it on fire, but you'll be able to smell it, and you can actually add like a just take a piece of steak, take the whole steak and touch it to the oil, and it's still holding in your hand so you can pick it back up. And if it makes the sound, you want it to hear like, okay, that oil is nice and hot. You put it in, you only need to cook it for like a minute. And this can happen on a grill too. You only cook it for like a minute on each side because that oil is going to be about 375 to 400 degrees. You don't want to exceed the smoke point of the oil. So you have to do a little bit of research with the oil you like.
Please.
So if you put the steak in and you hear it sizzling in the pan, you only need to cook it for a minute or so. And then you flip it. You can use a double spatula to do that. And it'll have beautiful grill marks because those caramelization starts at 337 degrees. So if that oil is 375, you're going to hit those sugars and proteins and all of that stuff in that steak are going to take on that charred flavor that you like, that seared, and it'll only take you a minute or two. So you can get, if you're having dinner for four, you can get four steaks out in less than 10 minutes. They'll have had rested while they were waiting for their turn in the skillet, and you know the internal temperature is right where you want it to be. So reverse sears are our friends, both in terms of time and in terms of outcome.
All right, next question.
No hands up.
No hands?
Oh, wait, now we do. Hold on.
Okay.
And you have none in Zoom.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Shelley Sawyer. I'm from Tallahassee. My question is, I am looking for something. I don't even know whether it exists or not. I want a pie cutter, something that I can set on a pie, press it down, and cut the pie in equal slices. Is there such an animal? And if there is, do you sell it or do I need to get it on Amazon?
I don't think it exists on Amazon. I haven't found it. My brother, we do have it in the blind kitchen. It's kind of like, do you know how an apple corer, where it's got where you push down on the handles, it's kind of like a steel wheel and you push down and it breaks your apple into segments? This works the same way, but it's a bigger wheel and there's no place for the core in the center, the points. It's called the pie trifecta, and it's even got one more thing that you might not have thought of. So it comes in three pieces. One is the pie tin, and you have to use the pie slicer with that particular pie tin for it to work.
Do I have to use the pie?
Good question. No, you don't. There's the magic of this. Is you can use.
Hang on, guys.
Okay.
That was good.
People who know me know I don't cook.
You can sell it on Amazon. $16 on Amazon.
Okay, but hold on. Let Deborah finish, please, because hers is the same price, but it's got three items in it. Go ahead, Deborah.
Oh, thank you. So it comes with three pieces. And by the way, I have cooked Marie Colander's chicken pot pie, the big ones in it. It works just fine. You just got to transfer that big frozen lump to my pie pan for that slicer to work. And when you push the slicer down, it has a handle on each side, and it will cut all the way through the pie to the bottom. It works perfectly every time. I've done Marie Colander's apple pies. It doesn't work good with the ones that have like whipped cream on them, like key lime pies. It doesn't cut through frosting. Frosting just kind of sticks to it. So I wouldn't suggest that. But the other piece that is so clever in this, it's called a bake under the pie server. And it's a little stainless steel thing that is shaped like a piece of pie. So this, my pie trifecta cuts it into six pieces. This, you take this this triangle of stainless steel, and you put it inside the pie pan when the pie pan is clean before you put any crust in it. Then you put either the frozen pie, if that's what you're going to be cooking in the oven, or your bottom pie crust, if you're doing a two crust pie, but whatever, even if you're doing a one crust pie or a quiche, you can just put it into the pan and that server's going to bake underneath it. And it's easy to position that pie. Then you put your filling in, put your second pie crust on, and then you bake it. When it's time to come out, you're going to let it cool, and you're going to feel around the edge of your pan, and it doesn't stick out very far, but it's enough for you to know. You're going to push the pie slicer down around that piece. It's easy to do. It's because it's this bake under the pie server, even people that can see can't see through pies. So they use the tip of their knife to go around that wedge, and it's like a platform. If you cut it, the crust up the side to the thing, to all the way on both sides to the rim of the pan, you lift straight up, it comes out perfectly. And it matches the six cuts that are in that pie tin. So you get all three pieces with the Blind Kitchen. It's called the pie trifecta.
Okay.
Oh.
We've got about five hands up, so just be a second. I'll move around.
All right, not a problem. Thank you, Jim.
My question, I'm Sharon Robinson from Sarasota, Florida. And my question is, sometimes I like to have fried food, like chicken. And I put it in the air fryer, but it's too hard. It makes it too hard. And I'm trying to figure out, I have a problem with measuring stuff. I mean, I'll pour some grease in, and I'm thinking, oh, that's a lot of grease. When all I did was just cover the bottom of the pot. So, you know, I ain't trying to start no fire. Well, I don't think you could you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, you could.
Okay. So, and I want to know about that double thing that turns the spatula.
The double spatula?
Yes, but I'm trying to, like, you know, every now and then I like to have some fried chicken.
And everybody overcooks their chicken these days. It's hard as a rock.
Yeah, and when you put it in the air fryer, you know, it's nice and hot, but when you take it out, that air fryer just like sucks the softness out of it. Yeah, and it's just hard. So could you help me out on that?
I can. I can give you a concept. I'm kidding. The problem with deep frying, for those of us that can see, we can do it. But where we run into trouble is that little pieces of the batter fall off. And those are the ones we can't see. We can get that big, you know, chicken wing out of there or the drumstick. But what's going to run us into trouble are the little pieces that break away of the batter, which they do. That's what happens when food is cooked or when you touch it with a utensil. And so that's where we get into trouble, because that food stays in there and we can skim until the cows come home. But if we miss a piece, that is what could catch on fire as it burns. So if you write to me at info@theblindkitchen.com, first of all, I'm a big fan of electric predictable fryers. One, they come in quite a few accessible formats, like with dials, where you could mostly you want to fry between, like, I'd say 335 and 370, that range. So you can put a bump dot at the lower part of it and a bump dot at the higher part, and that way you'll know you can adjust the water or the oil. But in theory, if the machine is working like it's supposed to, it will turn on and off and on and off to make it come to the temperature that you want, that you've set it for. But you could always turn it up a little bit if you feel like when you add that chicken, it the temperature of the oil will plunge because you've just added cold food to it. But hopefully it'll have a good recovery rate where it'll come back up. So I'm a big fan of using pre-monitored ones where they do the temperature for you, but I always have my talking thermometer nearby. So if I have any question and I'm not trusting that, I can put the tip of my talking thermometer into the oil and see if the rate's where I want it to be, or do I need to unplug it? I mean, it or turn the heat down. They tend to be, I find them to be very consistent. But the thing that solves the problem for us of the little floaties is that I can send you a link on Amazon. I'm going to sell them in the Blind Kitchen at some point in time. But basically, it is a kind of like a strainer. That's what it looks like. It looks like a saucepan. I think it holds about 6 or 8 cups, but it's got perforated holes. They're tiny ones, so no food can get through them. They're not the metal mesh baskets, the normal ones, which have plenty of room for little food pieces to get away from you. This one, you've got to do it really slowly, because it lets the oil in the pan slowly. And so you set it in the pan. Now you're going to put your food right inside that mesh strainer, or the perforated strainer. And when your chicken's done, first of all, it keeps it very manageable for you, because you know there's only, like, you know, a 6-inch circle where that food is going to be. It's not going to be in the corners or anything. It's going to be right there in that pan. And then you can actually use your talking thermometer to assess when it gets to 165 in the inside, so that you'll know the chicken's done even when the batter isn't. And then you can just lift that up. It's got a handle, and let it drain for a little bit over the thing. And you can take out your one piece of chicken, put it on your paper towels or your rack, whatever you're doing, or if you're doing two pieces, but you don't want them to stick together. And then you can take that perforated dish and you can bounce that over the garbage. So make sure use a paper towel to wipe it, make sure there's no pieces in there that are already cooked. And you can munch on those too, by the way, they're really good. And then you can go and put that thing back in the water and you're ready for your next piece of chicken. And I know it probably sounds time intensive, and it is for me. I have a hard time cooking large amounts of food. I can't track it. I'm just unable to. So for me, the advice I'll be giving you won't be to cook a whole thing of chicken for, you know, 3 generations of your family, but you'll be able to do it for a family of 4 pretty simply. And you can just take the chicken that's done and put it in like a 170 degree oven and let it just stay warm while the other ones are done, because it's not going to take that long. So as far as the double spatula goes, what that tool is, it's got a flat rectangle on the bottom. So it's just like a regular spatula that you have in your kitchen. It's flat. It's a rectangle. This one does have stripes in it, you know, like holes in it. Some of them don't. If you're frying an egg, you don't want one with the holes in it. But then it's got the handle comes out 11 inches, and then it turns around and curves. And then there's a smaller rectangle on the top of that. So basically, when I'm going to pick up that pork chop or that piece of chicken or that grilled cheese, I can now push down, make sure I get it settled. I can tell by the weight and the distribution if it's firm on the bottom of the bottom spatula. But then I can take my thumb and push down on the handle of the top spatula. They're together and they have that flexibility. And now I'm using it more like a tong. So instead of me turning it, and gravity eventually kicking in and it's going to drop wherever the heck it wants to, now I have some control. I can actually put it down pretty much in the same place I got it out of, because I have that tong control. It's not just a spatula that, okay, here we go, flip fast because it's going to fall in. It gives you more control. And we have them both in stainless steel, if you're using cast iron or some kind of a pan like that. But we also have them in silicone if you're worried about your non-stick surface. Did that help?
Where did you order it from?
Where can you order it, she asked.
Okay, if you go to theblindkitchen.com, it's our website. It's very, very blind friendly, screen reader and magnifier friendly, no pop-up ads, no affiliates. It's just simple and clean. You go onto the shop page and then you can add it to your cart and we'll ship it to you. Free shipping and no taxes.
What's it called, Deborah?
It's the double spatula. So the double spatula stainless steel is $11.99, no taxes, no shipping. And the silicone one, I think, is $15.99.
All right, Jim, next hand.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Jay Rasmussen from Tucson, Arizona. And I'd like to know about French toast cooking it in the George Foreman grill. Can you do it?
You're in the wrong state. I'm kidding. You're exactly where you need to be. I've never tried that. I've made grilled cheeses, but French toast is stickier. It's got sugar in it where grilled cheese don't. I honestly don't have the answer to that. I should ask my smart speaker. She'll know. Sorry about that. I grease it up really good.
Hi, I'm Bethany from Fort Myers area. Anyway, a quick question. Do you have any tips, trades, things that might help out with using the air fryer?
Yeah. So I love my air fryer, and it's not good for everything, for sure, but it is very good for some things. So one thing that happens, and it used to happen to me, was when I had to flip the food halfway through, you're putting your hand in that basket, your knuckles hit the side of the hot walls. It's not fun. So that glove I described to you, that cut glove, it's not meant to protect against heat, but it does for a second. So that if I'm going down there and flipping my food, that if my knuckles hit the side of it, I'm just going to pull back and I won't have been burnt. It won't have been in contact with it long enough. It's kind of like the cutting thing. If you feel contact and you don't expect it, you just stop. And so that is my tip for the air fryer, to avoid having your hands get burnt. And these gloves are, I have about four hanging on hooks from my refrigerator, and they you can machine wash them really easy, or you can hand wash them. So they're super low maintenance. So it's a nice product to have around.
Okay. Hi, Deborah of Kathy. A quick question about, could you make recommendations, please, on the various audio thermometers, please?
Oh, okay, so there are some that are very expensive and very good. Some are you can use with VoiceOver, others you can't. And the one we sell in the Blind Kitchen, it is a battery operated. We just kept it simple so more people could get their hands on it. But there are some that you can put in your oven or your grill, if you're grilling something and closing the lid, like the big green monsters, and then they can work with VoiceOver. The problem with the more expensive ones that are high tech, I'm a fan, but sometimes they quit supporting the technology. They quit supporting the app. They quit selling them, and then you're stuck with this equipment where you cannot get updates. So I'm not a huge fan of updating, of buying things that need software updates. I'm sure there are people that will swear by them here, that they've gone for years. I just, when you own a business, you kind of have to develop a philosophy or come up with some guidelines. And for the Blind Kitchen, I thought, I'm not going to have people buy a $200 piece of equipment that's not, that then they go out of business. And as many of you probably know, Brava, that was one that they had these beautiful ovens that cooked with light and stuff like that, and just went out of business early March. They were gone. So that just further confirms my belief that I use my Siri all the time. I use my smart speaker all the time. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of physical equipment that requires a software update, that I won't support that. So there, but I can send you, you could, of course, go to the Blind Kitchen, ours is nothing special. It's the voice is a little bit gnarly. It's just not a great voice to say that, but they're hard to find ones with nice voices. They used to have one, the Kaizen, but they quit making it just out of the blue. But ours is accurate, and that's the main thing. It doesn't matter what the voice sounds like if you're not killing your family. I don't care if they talk to me in French. Just you know, give me the information I need to make a healthy plate for my family and friends.
All right, Nick. Next.
I'm Susie from Daytona Beach. And my question is, and if you have measuring cups that are different colors. Years ago, they were easy to buy, and I only have one left. It's yellow because I can't see colors. It's the cup was yellow for the one cup. But I was wondering if maybe your store carries them in colors or... have you seen them somewhere that somebody could buy? Because if you can see colors sometimes, like I can, that's what you need instead of trying to struggle sometimes with the measuring.
Right, right. I'm a big fan of contrast. I can't see color anymore. The pigment part of retinitis pigmentosa takes that away from you. But, excuse me. But I'll tell you what we have in the Blind Kitchen. We only have one type of measuring cup. It is not color. It's stainless steel. But we have measuring cups and spoons. And the way you know what the sizes are with no vision at all is there are dots that are part, they're stainless steel. They're manufactured with the handle. So they're not bump dots. They're not tactile paint. They're not going to come off. Unless your handle comes off, then you're going to lose them all. But they're very sturdy stainless steel. And you just have to count them. And I'll tell you how it works. So if I'm holding a spoon or a cup and it has four dots on it, they're prominent. They're evenly spaced. They're pretty easy to do. I'm holding a quarter cup or a quarter teaspoon because the four dots. Three dots is going to be a third. Two dots, the bottom denominator is two, so it's going to be a half a cup or a half a teaspoon. And then the other thing, I won't go into detail unless people want me to, is there is a difference. So the dry measuring cups and spoons, wet measuring cups and spoons, all have that dot system. But where the wet differs from the dry is that the handle faces upwards towards the ceiling. In the spoons and the wet cups, which means that you are now using more like a ladle, which is a much easier way to transfer liquid. And if you're measuring out things like vanilla, that's hard to get an even teaspoon because you pour and you touch, you pour and you touch. When you really have got it level or to the top, you've probably spilled a little bit. That's part of that fun. But if you're using it like a ladle with our system, you don't waste any. Any waste that overflows while you're doing your work falls into a little pitcher we send you, and then you can put it back into the vanilla bottle with a funnel that we send you that's a great size. So we don't have the colored ones in the Blind Kitchen. I want things to be, I try to get everything to be accessible to everyone with no vision, or if you have partial vision, anybody can use those cups and spoons.
Let me check with Marianne. Marianne, do we have any Zoom hands?
We do not, Sheila.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Jim?
Hi, this is DJ, and I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. And for those of us who have our luxurious Emerson air fryers, the question is posed, when using it to talk, you know, and it talks back to you, you say, hey, air fryer, set your temperature to whatever degrees, and it says, sorry, keep trying. How do you get past mechanism where you can get consistently to respond to you? And thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you for that question. But boy, I hate to say it, I am not an expert on appliances. I have a Kosari air fryer, so I could answer how that one works. But they're the ACB. I don't know if you have any sessions there, but their ACB has a community call called It's Electric, and Sheila can give you more, somebody can give you more information. That's just like what we're doing now, like you guys are there in person, but once a month or twice a month, you can call in and ask questions of It's Electric. I don't run that group, But they're experts at appliances and stuff. And I've heard them talk about this Emerson air fryer because I attend whenever I can. And I'm going to need to get one because you're about the fourth person that has asked me about them. So I'm going to have to get one so I can speak to it, at least be familiar with it. So thank you for the question, but I'm going to have to send you to another expert.
Hi, it's Terry Suarez again, and I just want to say thank you so much for doing this presentation. I'm sorry. I'm really missing Janine right now. There is a lot of great tools and a lot of great things I learned from Janine and Herbie. Herbie is one of our team members that's helping us get out in the world, and they did a great bake and stuff show, and I learned a lot from them. And the one thing I learned is silicone is great. It can be your friend. With my measuring cups, I take the time to put them back together because the one cup holds the half a cup and stuff like that. So I keep them together and then I just count what size they are. I just want to say thank you. So I just didn't have a question, just a comment of saying thank you.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here, and I am so lucky to be surrounded by so many other knowledgeable people. But if you get a little piece of this, a little piece of that, you're going to be better off because we do have such a varied group of people. And thank you.
All right, we've got about 10 minutes.
Hi there. This is Matt. Maybe you already covered this. I apologize. I was a little distracted with my Meta glasses earlier, so sorry. Do you have a book of all of these things you've been discussing or present on, maybe, perhaps, and or do you have a podcast where you talk about maybe some of these things, other than just you're doing a fantastic job of presenting and talking? Thank you so much. But I was just curious about either of those things.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I love my Meta glasses, by the way. We're going to be filming again in June, and I plan to do a kitchen segment of how I use them in the kitchen and shopping and stuff. So the website, I don't have a book per se, but the website is really where all of this information lives. It's called theblindkitchen.com. And make sure you use the word the, because all these, so I've talked a lot about tools and tips and tricks. They all exist on the website. And the other place you can get this in a more bite size, if you will, forgive the pun, pieces of information, are if you sign up for the newsletter. And you can write to me at info@theblindkitchen.com, or you can sign up through the website. And then once a month, you get a tool of the month. If I'm highlighting a tool, we now have 125, so there's a lot of stuff going on there. We give you a tip of the month, and the tip of the month, I'll give you an example of one we did recently, was if you're cooking on a stovetop and you've just seared that steak, or you've turned that French toast, whatever you're doing, and now you remove the pan, but now that burner is still hot and you don't want to put a wooden spoon down on it or a towel or anything, and you don't want to, you're going to be distracted preparing that food. I keep a teapot half full of water on the back of my stove at all times. So when I now have an open hot burner that I'm done with, it's off, but it still can burn me for a length of time, that I take the teapot and put it on the hot burner. So it is going to have, it's going to cover that and protect me. So if I go to accidentally put something down on that burner, or to get my hand too close to it, I'm going to touch the pot. So those are some things, that's not something I sell. That's just information. And we have hundreds of blind friendly tips just to help make our cooking experience a little safer and a little more pleasant.
Sandra from Orlando. I have a glass stovetop. Do you sell rings? Because I never can find the burner.
Right. No, that is a special problem for cooking with vision loss. There's no doubt about it. But I'll give you a brief description of how you can do it without rings. I don't sell them. The problem, like someone just said, silicone can be your friend, but silicone has a fire point where it can catch on fire. I think it's like 475 degrees, not as hot as we generally cook in our ovens. So it's good for some things, but it can't stand the heat of a stovetop. That's too much. But I'm going to go really quickly through this, but go to the website. It's called How to Center a Pan on the Stove, and it's an audio described video. But basically, you can touch the top of a clean, hot pan for just a second. The rim. That's on top. Just the rim. Pull your finger away. You're not going to burn yourself. You can do it multiple times. If your pan is not centered on the top of the stove, you should be able to touch it at all the way around like a clock, and it should be equally hot. If somehow I'm stirring something, I've nudged it, I didn't realize I nudged it, as I'm going to check, I'm touching the top. That's what I do when I'm cooking at my stove. Now, let's say at 4 o'clock, if I'm standing in front of this circular pan, it's really hot on top, and it's not that hot at 10 o'clock. What I know is that I have pushed it off center, and the heat is now climbing the side of the pan and getting there more efficiently than having to travel through the pan and the food. So then I know to nudge it more towards 4 o'clock, and then I'm going to check again, and I'm going to keep checking. So you don't need the rings, and this takes a little bit getting used to, and you don't have to start with, you know, your flame on screaming high. You can start with it on low until you build up your confidence that you're getting that information that you need. But the pan has to completely cover the heat source for this to work. Otherwise, if it's smaller than the heat source, the heat can climb up all the sides of it, and that's not going to help you one bit. So that I hope that helps answer your question, but it is possible. But you can't touch hot water or hot food, because when you touch it, you can touch it for a second, and when you pull it away, the fat or the liquid comes away with your finger, and it's going to keep on burning you. So it's got to be a clean, dry rim of a pan, which most of ours are when we're cooking, and that's how that system works.
Hi there, I'm from Tallahassee, and I have a question regarding, without using a timing method, how to determine when it's time to flip a pancake and also cooking a fried egg as opposed to scrambling.
Mm-hmm. Good questions, and they're both doable. We have something called egg rings. They're silicone, they have handles. It's all described on the thing, but both the things you've described are liquid foods. If you put liquid food into a pan, it's going to go wherever it wants. It's unpredictable unless you have a way to contain it. And these are about 3.5 inches around, and you grease them, you put them in the pan. And then for the pancake, I use 1/4 cup of pancake batter and dump it in. So then it's timing. It depends on how thick the bottom of your pan is. It depends on how high your heat is, the ambient air. But what you need to do is practice and find out, is it 3 minutes and 30 seconds on the first side? And then you flip it over. When you go to flip it over, your egg or your pancake is now set, so you can get rid of the egg ring, and you can flip it over, and it's going to be less on the other side, like maybe a minute and 45 seconds. But the nice thing about these egg rings and pancake rings, they're both the same thing, by the way. They're in different places on the website, but just buy one. It'll do both your pancakes and your eggs. But it climbs the side of the silicone. Most pancakes tend to flare out and taper out on the edges as they cook. With this one, it keeps it all really nice and high. it's a bonus.
Okay, all yours, Sheila.
All right. Well, Marianne, nobody?
No, ma'am.
All right. Well, Deborah, it looks like we have come to the end of our session. I cannot thank you enough for taking time. Would you do me a big favor and give your email and your website out one more time, please?
Oh, sure. So you can write to me, and I monitor this mailbox myself. I've got a great team, but these come to me. It's info@theblindkitchen.com. Make sure you use the word the. And then, or go to the website. It's www.theblindkitchen.com. And please do write to me. I enjoy these kinds of questions. And I can, if you had a question like today, I can actually respond to you with the link to the correct place on the website if you're unable to find it.
Also, Deborah does a call, and it's once a month, right?
Mm-hmm. The first
it's
Wednesday.
The first Wednesday of the month on the community call at 7 p.m., and it's called Cooking with the Blind Kitchen. So, Deborah, thank you so much. Let's do another recipe joint call together.
I look forward to it, Sheila. Thank you. And thanks for all you do. And thank you, everyone. You were a great group.
Have a wonderful day.
Wish I was there.
Thank you, Herbie. Thank you, Marianne. Thank you, Cecily.
Welcome.
Thank you, ACB Media.